Okay, good morning, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this meeting of the Orange County Housing and Community Development Commission for Thursday, October 23rd, 2025. Who would like to join me in saying the Pledge of Allegiance today? Does anybody want to volunteer?
I'll do it.
Okay, great.
Please join me.
Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. We will now proceed to the agenda for this morning's meeting. The agenda contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as otherwise provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing in today's agenda. Public comments are not unlimited and do not include the right to defame or slander. The use of profanity that causes a disturbance or disruption in the proceeding and is truly objectionable is not allowed, and it may cause us to have to take a recess from the meeting. Public comments must be within the subject matter jurisdiction of this commission. As such, attacks on persons who are not subject to the jurisdiction of the commission will not be heard. Madam Clerk, will you please call roll?
Yes, good morning. Mr. Boyd?
Yes.
Thank you. Mrs. Law? Second call for Ms. Tracy Law. Mr. Mike Alvarez?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Carrie Buck?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Stephanie Otto?
Here.
Dr. Tiffany Mitchell?
Here.
Mr. Wayne Carvalho?
Here.
Ms. Carla Wilkerson?
Here.
Mr. Mike Frost?
Here.
And Ms. Cecilia Hupp?
Here.
Madam Chair, we have quorum, and I'd like to announce some housekeeping items before we begin. Please note that if a quorum is lost due to members leaving early or any other reason, the chair shall promptly end the meeting. If you wish to comment on specific agenda items in person, please complete a speaker request form identifying the item number, your name, and deposit the completed form in the box located next to the clerk. To speak on a matter not appearing in the agenda but under the jurisdiction of the HNCD Commission, you may do so during public comments. Speaker request forms must be deposited prior to the beginning of the consent calendar, the reading of the individual agenda item, the opening of the public hearing, and or the beginning of public comment item. When your name is called, please come to the podium and begin your comments by stating your name or pseudonym for the record. Members of the public desiring to speak should address all remarks and questions to the commission. Speakers may address the commission on up to three occasions, with 3 minutes allotted to the speaker per occasion.
Okay, we'll now move on to the approval of the minutes that was held on August 28th, 2025. Madam Clerk, have you received any public comments for this item?
Chair, no requests to speak on approval of the minutes have been received.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to move agenda item number 4.
So moved. Second.
Okay, moved by
Cecilia
Hupp and seconded by Carrie Buck. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Okay, motion passes unanimously. We do not have any presentations today, so we'll move on to public comments. At this time, members of the public may address the HNCD Commission regarding any items within the subject matter jurisdiction of this commission, provided that no action shall be taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Speakers will have 3 minutes to address the commission, and the clerk will run the timer and announce when your time has expired. Madam Clerk, do you have any public comments?
Chair, no requests to speak on public comments have been received.
Okay, thank you so much. We'll move on to our consent calendar item. The first item is the 2025-26 Housing Choice Voucher Payment Standard, presented by January Johnson, our housing manager. Thank you so much.
Good morning, everyone. January Johnson, housing manager, Orange County Housing Authority. So what this item is, on an annual basis, we evaluate our payment standards based on the FMR, or fair market rents, that are released by HUD on an annual basis. HUD releases those fair market rents about September of every year, and then the housing authorities have up to 90 days or until January to establish new payment standards. We have to make sure that the payment standards are set between 90% of that fair market rent and 110% of that fair market rent. The ultimate goal with those fair market rents is to ensure that payment standards are established not to drive the market. So you'll find that our payment standards are not at the top of the market. They're not to drive the market. They're supposed to reflect what looks like the bottom 40% of the average market rents. Our other goal, and you'll notice it in the memo, our other goal is to ensure that not more than 30% of our households on the program are paying more than 30% of their income towards rent. So it's like the 30-30 rule. So when we evaluate every year, that's what we do. We look by bedroom size and by city and by area just to make sure that there are no households or a good percentage of households who are paying over that 30% and adjust where we can while we're keeping within that 90% to 110% range. OCHA has established three payment standards ranges. We have not changed that, so that has been the same over the last several years. We have a basic range, a central range, and a restricted range. The restricted range is basically everything South County. So, I mean, if you can look at what the actual cities are, but South County is a good descriptor. Our central range are three cities. It's Huntington Beach, Fountain Valley, and
Costa Mesa.
I'm sorry, thank you, Costa Mesa. And then our basic range are all the other cities there. In general, we have established our payment standards to be about 90%, 90.5, 90, in the 90% range for a basic, about 92% for our central, and about 95 for our restricted. There are some bedroom sizes in the restricted range that are higher than that 95% because we did want to keep everybody's as low as possible, the number of families paying over that 30%. And so we found like the two bedroom needed an additional increase in the payment standard that we applied, and the three bedroom as well. And I think that gives me my summary of our payment standards. So they're here for you to review. I have any questions?
Any questions from the commission?
Just logistically how it works. God, I'm surprised I don't know this. If we go and look at the impact of proposed standards, let's just take the second bullet. So we have some households, we have 2.3% of households that pay over 40% of their income. And that, so if they, let's say they are in the restricted payment standards, and it's a one bedroom. So the actual rent for one of those is clearly higher than 2,610, correct?
That's correct. Because this is a choice program, we do not restrict, except for initial move-in, HUD does not restrict the amount of a family's income that can go towards rent. That ensures that families don't move into a unit and then there's a rent increase, then we tell them you immediately have to move.
Yep.
And the family then can decide if this is a unit that still works for them, even if they are paying higher than what HUD's maximum at the initial move-in. HUD's maximum at that initial move-in is 40% of their income towards rent. And so a family may decide that 50% works for them because of the neighborhood or the schools or whatever their particular choice is for living in a certain community. So there are going to be some households that choose to remain in a unit that does cost them more than that goal that we tried to set. So that's why, if you'll notice, 2.3, that's significantly lower than our 30% goal.
Yep.
So we found that to be a reasonable amount for us to see over that 40% because there's still choice out there for our clients.
And we would never say, hey, the point of this is to help you guys. You should not be living here if you need to pay 50%. That's
not for us to say. We counsel our clients if it becomes something where you're seeing that things become over, say, 80% or closer to the 100% of their income goes towards rent. We do counsel. I mean, that is our role, is to communicate to our clients. We would never tell them to move. That is a personal choice, and it's a choice program.
Do we have any tenants the opposite way, where, they've got a great landlord, and we could be giving them 2,610, but the entire lease is only 2,300. Do we have any scenarios in that?
Absolutely. We have a lot of households that are paying their 30% because they have found a unit that falls at or below our payment standard. That would be the majority of our households.
So I'm sorry, they're not paying anything?
No, they have to pay 30%
still
of their
have to pay 30.
Towards rent.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is not, we don't pay based on what the rent amount is. In a way we do because of the calculation, but the household pays 30% of their income towards rent. If their income is zero, then they pay zero. their income is $100, and they pay $30. So the family is responsible for 30% of their income towards rent, regardless of what the actual rent amount is, unless it exceeds a payment standard.
And then, do we then take that net savings and create another voucher?
This is how we establish how much funding we have to serve how many people. So that is really where the balance is on our payment standards. So if we're looking at, I could certainly establish a very high payment standard in the restricted area to wipe out anybody paying over 40% of our income towards rent. However, that means I would serve less people because I would run out of money sooner. So absolutely, the savings that we get from families that are able to keep at a lower rent, I can use for more people. So it's that balance, making sure that you don't limit people's ability to find affordable housing, while at the same time having enough funding to support as many voucher holders as possible.
Great, thank you.
Commissioner Buck.
Terry Buck, just to add to that, explain a little bit more, there are a lot of families that will choose to be either closer to a family, they may be living in a place because of a school or a job, and so moving far away would just increase the expenses overall, so they'll choose to pay a little bit more to be in that location.
Okay. Any other? Okay. Madam Clerk, have you received any public comments on this item?
Chair, no request to speak on consent calendar item number one.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to receive and file consent item number one. Okay, moved by Commissioner Huff. Sorry, I got Buck and Huff right next to each other, so I gotta think before I say anything.
Second.
And second by Commissioner Alvarez. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposing? No, motion carries unanimously. Okay, you're up again. 2026 Annual Utility Allowance Review. Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Mary Johnson again, Housing Manager for the Orange County Housing Authority. You guys are going to hear a lot from me today, so I'll probably be hovering around the podium for a little bit. This one is a little bit more straightforward. Again, on an annual basis, HUD requires that the Housing Authority review our utility allowance schedule and make sure that it has not increased by more than 10% over the last year. If it has increased by more than 10% in any of our utilities that we have listed, so like if heating or water or electricity, by bedroom size, we have to adjust that particular field in our schedule. We are not experts on utilities, so we hire a contractor to tell us what the average utilities are in Orange County. Our contractor is Nelrod. We've used Nelrod for several years, and Nelrod is used by most of the housing authorities in Southern California. So they are the contractor that most of us rely on. Based on Nelrod's review, they provided us our report, and there has not been a change of 10% or more in any of our utilities from last year to this year. I'm sure that you're wondering how that's actually possible, because I'm sure all of you guys have utilities that come and you're like, wait a second, everything is more expensive. About 4 years ago, we had tried a different contractor. We had moved away from Nelrod and we went to Zephyr and Associates. When we moved to Zephyr and Associates, their evaluation came back really high. And we set a utility allowance schedule incredibly high based on that information. We got a lot of feedback from households and landlords in the community that there was something that our utility allowance seemed incredibly high. And it didn't seem in line with what they were seeing in the county. There is a negative impact on households to have a too high utility allowance, because in order for us to approve a family to move into a unit, we base it 40% we talked about earlier, is based on the gross rent. So the contract rent plus the utility allowance. So the higher the utility allowance, that more than cuts into their ability to move into a unit and reduces the contract rent that they can find a unit for. So we went back to the drawing board. We asked the other housing authorities in the area who they use. We went back to Nelrod based on our analysis that Nelrod was more in line with what was happening with utilities in the community. And we have found that in the last few years, we're finally just catching up, making that ground back from where we had to set that really high utility allowance. So that's why you're not seeing anything different here, is we're realigning. The reason why we didn't immediately drop the utility allowance schedule the following year is because if you do that to a household, then families who have been relying on a certain allowance coming towards them or the using in their portion of rent, will immediately see that their rent goes up. And so the negative impact on the families is greater than us having this utility allowance that was a little out of line with what the community was seeing. And so we're just back on track here. We'll tell you that probably next year, I will be telling you a different story. We're almost aligned. And so next year, we'll see some changes, I suspect, with our utility allowance schedule.
Question.
Commissioner Alvarez.
The newer affordable housing units that are coming online in different cities, are they eliminating gas as one of the utilities? It seems on the commercial side, they are, but...
I can say that we have heard back a lot of requests in the past, not so much this year after we spoke to a lot of our community stakeholders, for a energy efficient utility allowance, because a lot of people are moving to a more energy efficient, like heat pumps and electric instead of gas. In having those conversations, we were able to allow affordable housing developments to ask for a waiver to our utility allowance, and they can use the California tax, their CTAC is what it is, and they can set up, establish their own utility allowance based on that schedule if they ask us for a waiver. But for your individual households or smaller households, even if they are moving to something that's a little bit more energy efficient, like away from gas and into electric, the negative impact to families in using an energy efficient utility allowance is greater than the housing authority absorbing that additional cost by having a set utility allowance. That's because it'll be lower and it counts as a credit towards their rent. So if a family is responsible for, say, a $2,000 rent, and then they have a $200 utility allowance, you take that away from that $2,000 and they pay less. I don't know if that answers your question so much.
It does. I didn't realize that had to happen.
Commissioner Bowie?
Yes. I have difficulty in correlating the no greater than 10% change to a TP. I have trouble in relating that to the chart on the next page. Can you explain it to me what those numbers represent?
Sure. So when we contract with NELROD, they give us those numbers. So they'll tell us what the average amount of, say, electricity cost for a one bedroom for cooking would be in Orange County. They'll give us a number. And what we have to do is take that number, look at our previous schedule. So we'll look at the number that NELROD tells us, look at the other schedule. If there's a change of more than 10%, then we have to increase it. This is our actual schedule. So what you're taking a look at, you don't see there, but what you're looking at on that screen is the actual schedule, based on NELROD's numbers. So you're not gonna see a 10% change on that. You'd have to look at the other old, and you'd have to look at what NELROD gave us.
Sure, so let's just take one column and sure. Give me so I can have a feel for it. Right now I don't have any feel. Let's take the one bedroom column, which is the second column. For gas, cooking is 4, heating 18, water heating is 10. So those are the percentage compared to 100% of what it used for?
No, those are actually the dollar amounts that a household will receive in a credit towards their rent to cover utility costs.
Oh, I see, okay, so. I got it. So that's the dollar amount that they was given?
Correct, okay. And so what we evaluate is when our contractor tells us, say that $10, did they come back and say it was $12? If they came back and said it was $12 and we had it set at $10, then we would have to make a change because that's more than a 10% increase.
I see, okay, got it.
Okay, if there's no more questions, Madam Clerk, are there any public comments on this item?
Chair, no request to speak on consent calendar for item number 2.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to receive and file consent item number 2 then.
I'll move the recommended action. Frost.
Commissioner Frost moves the motion and Commissioner Mitchell seconds it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries unanimously. Thank you so much. You weren't kidding when you said you were going to stay up there, were you?
Me, nope.
Okay. So we're moving on to discussion calendar items. And our first item is 2025-26 proposed administrative plan and annual plan revisions. Ms. January Johnson.
Hi, January Johnson, Orange County Housing Authority Housing Manager. So for a little history, back in January, you guys appointed yourself as our Residents Advisory Board for our annual plan typically what happens is a housing authority will have an annual plan or a five-year plan. It gets submitted one time a year. And so you guys have the pleasure of being our residency advisory board one time in a year. This year, you get the opportunity to be the resident advisory board twice because we are taking our administrative plan to the Board of Supervisors, which are actually our Board of Commissioners, for a what's called a significant amendment. You can, the Housing Authority can make changes to our administrative plan without issuing it to the public for review or taking it to our Board of Commissioners if it's small changes or clarifying changes. But if we're going to make a significant change to our administrative plan, we do have to present it for a public hearing and we have to get feedback from our resident advisory board. If we make a significant change, you're going to see this is both our administrative plan and our annual plan. If we make a significant change to our administrative plan, we have to revise our annual plan. So what you're saying is that we are bringing to you the significant change to our administrative plan and as well our revised annual plan referring to that significant change. I'm going to touch the annual plan first because this is the simpler of the two. The annual plan is still a template. It was a template just like it was in April when you guys looked at it before. It's not a large document. Very simple template. And on the template, we are only changing section B1. B1 will outline what that significant amendment is. So if you're looking through that annual plan, just it's on B1 and that's the only change. And HUD has changed everything so that we actually don't submit a form anymore. It's all done electronically and it's done through a portal. So this the form is really just for you guys to see what it looks like, but in the portal it's just a field that we fill out. Now for what the significant amendment is. I think we've talked about it several times here about the emergency housing vouchers and the impact on housing authorities for those vouchers. In order for us to resolve that challenge, it would require a change to our administrative plan. The goal for us was to see how HUD let us know that we could put those voucher holders onto our Housing Choice Voucher waiting list and then provide them assistance through the Housing Choice Voucher program. This is significant because the Emergency Housing Voucher program was funded completely separately from the Housing Choice Voucher program. They were two separate programs, and that's why we have to take some of these steps in order to move them over to a different funding source. So really this is a change of one funding source to another funding source. Right? So in order to do that, HUD told us that we needed to update our administrative plan to create a new preference. Whenever you make a change to preferences, it is a significant amendment. And so that is the only significant amendment in this administrative plan update. You will notice there are a ton of changes that are also part of this plan. None of those changes would require us to go to the Board of Commissioners or get feedback from the Residency Advisory Board because they are all regulatory in nature. We have no choice in adopting those changes. Even though it looks like a whole huge red line document, it's because those changes, HUD allows you to update your plan as soon as is possible. And so we collect all the changes and then make the update all at once. So the area that we really want to focus on is that significant amendment, and that's that change to our preference. What we're asking is to add a second preference to our list of preferences, and the specific language is for individuals and families who are at risk of rental assistance loss due to funding or program changes, and the definition of that is at OCHA's discretion, families currently receiving assistance through special purpose voucher or grant-funded programs such as emergency housing vouchers who are at risk of losing assistance may be offered the next available HCV or another qualifying voucher if more families qualify than vouchers available. Priority will be based on the original referral date to OCHA. What this allows is for us to then move those households who are going to be losing their funding in the emergency housing voucher over to the Housing Choice Voucher Program ahead of our other established preferences. You will note that the language is vague. It does talk about through special purpose voucher or grant-funded programs. This language was developed in with assistance from the HUD technical advisor, and it allows us then to, if there are any other grant programs or any other funding voucher programs, such as the mainstream voucher program or say the continuum of care, grant-funded program, if there are any other programs impacted, we wouldn't have to go back to the board or back to you to ask for an adjustment here to help those families and keep them housed. So our ultimate goal here is to make sure that people who are housed remain housed, and regardless of the grant or funding or those special purpose options. So that's why it's vague in that language. Just a little bit on the EHV, a plan on the EHV. This is not as connected to the significant amendment, but in case you're wondering, well, then what is the plan for the EHV? We have established a plan that would allow us to, we have 489 voucher holders who are housed. So those people are in units that we're paying rent on. We received our last funding allocation that indicated we would have funding through 2026. And then HUD came out with guidance on what we could do. We could establish a preference and move them over to the Housing Choice Voucher Program. Based on a review of funding available, we cannot move all 489 over to the Housing Choice Voucher Program immediately. And we want to make sure that we can continue to meet our commitments for our project-based vouchers through 2026. So we looked at that. We also have about 2,000 people on our 2012 waiting list and 12,000 people waiting on our 2023 waiting list. So we wanted to find out if we could establish a plan that would help us keep our commitments to the project-based vouchers, maybe be able to select some names from the Housing Choice Voucher list, and keep our emergency housing voucher holders housed. So HUD told all the housing authorities, if anybody you move over in 2025, we're going to give you a $1,000 bonus for. If you're doing the math, $489,000 is not enough to really support these families long term. But any additional funding that we could bring into the housing authority is great news. So our plan or our goal is to move 100 people over in 2025 to capitalize on that bonus. That leaves us enough funding available for throughout the next 2 years, 23 years, 26, 27, and 28, to slowly move people over from the emergency housing voucher program so that we can fully exhaust the funding that we were allocated there and still free up enough space for us to be able to meet our commitments for our project-based vouchers that we have for the affordable housing developments that we have out on the, in the queue. And unless anything else comes up or any other changes come up with funding, to allow us to then select names from the waiting list about mid-year next year. That's our plan with the emergency housing vouchers, assuming everything kind of rolls along as right now, which is a very light assumption, but assuming that it all rolls like it is. And in order to do any of that, we need this significant amendment to be approved. So we do need feedback from you guys. If you have any recommendations on the language or any recommendations at all, feedback at all regarding this?
Yeah, Commissioner Buck.
This is sort of the world that I live in as Dr. Mitchell. This is a huge thing that January has brought to us because it's gonna save families from ending up on the street, basically. The ability and the thought that you put into this to capture those families and also to balance that with all the thousands and thousands and thousands that are waiting and have been for a decade or more is very thoughtful, so I appreciate that. And as I've heard Julia say before, because I've seen this presentation at a variety of places, because this is my wheelhouse, it didn't just start now. It started years ago because of the thoughtfulness that you had put into this to help mitigate anything coming or to help as many families as we could. This is really a scary situation. If we don't do something like this, we're gonna have over 1,000 families. We're looking at 1,400, something like that.
We have 489, but in all of Orange County, yeah, it's a little about 1,000. Yeah.
So this Housing Authority, Garden Grove, Santa Ana, Anaheim, all of those are communicating because what January has figured out, the others need to do too, so that we don't have that same problem. So I 100% support this. I wish we could figure out something to do more. I'll share some things that we've been doing on our team as we get later in comments, but thank you, and I'm a little worried about what's coming next.
Any other feedback from anyone? Yeah,
Commissioner. I was just going to follow up on that. It sounds like, I don't have anything on the detail, but the plan sounds really, really intelligent. Like, I would say you never want to take something away from somebody, right? And of course, it sounds like you want to also keep going with the project-based vouchers, but I would say number one, you know, don't lose those people that we currently have housed. I mean, I would say they are all obviously the number one priority. But if you're able to, sounds like you're able to solve it all, not lose the 489, get some people off the waiting list, and still help out on some new builds, that sounds really well done.
Sounds brilliant, yeah. Any other comments? Yes, Commissioner Mitchell.
So I also think it's very well planned out, and I guess I want to follow up on something that Carrie said, and maybe I missed something that you said, January, but how is the county partnering with the other housing authorities on the strategy?
We have been, I have to give credit to the Office of Care Coordination because they have really done what is in their title, coordinate. And so they've done a very good job of making sure that all of us are communicating. We have a good relationship with the other housing authorities to begin with. And so we were kind of talking about it in the beginning, but I will say the Office of Care Coordination pulled together everybody, and they've been looking at what other counties and cities in the area are doing as well. So it's not just a local conversation, it's like more of a broader conversation. What's happening here and what are the strategies that other people are using or implementing? Because not everybody has the funding available to do what we're doing here. Some housing authorities or some communities are in a completely different situation. So in answer to your question though, the Office of Care Coordination has brought everybody together. We are having regular conversations. And so we were just happened to be the first one to do this. And it does allow then other people to see, we didn't do it alone. I had to talk to a lot of people to see what other communities were thinking of doing. The HUD technical advisor was a great assist because I wanted to see, you know, what their recommendations were, and they were looking at it on a national level. And so that's really what it is that we just happened to be the first ones coming to the table, but we're still in those conversations. And again, I would give credit to the Office of Care Coordination on that.
One more question. You mentioned the Continuum of Care Board, and I know that there's some funding cuts across the board. Were you referring to families that were funded through maybe COC dollars? There was some conversation around how the county could support those families that were funded through.
So I think Julia will have a very big update on the COC funded. I will just say that the language is vague so that we can, I think to Mike's point too, it's about keeping people housed. Continue to be housed. Like, that's our ultimate goal, and I think that's going to be a universal goal that everybody is going to come is on board with. You don't want to displace anybody who's already housed at all the effort that we put into these households. So that's why that language is that vague, so that there, if there is any other programs that are impacted, it allows us the flexibility. But I think Julia is going to go into a lot more detail.
Commissioner Bowie, am I saying your name right, Bowie?
Yeah, yes, Bowie.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Commissioner Bowie.
Frank Bowie, yeah.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I would like to thank you, yours and your team effort in trying to solve this very complex and difficult situation. I think what we hope to achieve is on a couple of things. Number one is to prevent people from becoming homeless. Because once they become homeless for a couple of years, it's very difficult for them, and also take us a lot of effort to try to bring them back. And so I think that there need to be some plan to try to accommodate that. And then the second thing would be, we need to try to balance between helping more people with less. So meaning that more people will receive less money, as opposed to less people receiving more assistance. So I think that would be a very difficult balance for us to do, but I think we need to continue to look at that. Because it's hurt me when I was in the Garden Grove Housing Authority Commission. It hurt me to see that there are 20,000 people or so having to wait more than 10 years before their turn get to be called on. And some people die waiting for it. So I think that would be something that I hope the care team will continue to try to see and look back into those who have already received it for many years and see if their condition has been improved, and perhaps there's some way for us to reduce a little bit of that so that more people will have a chance to benefit from this.
I think that it all ties in, so I really appreciate you guys taking an opportunity to even review the payment standards, because I think that has some, you know, when we're talking about those conversations about how to make sure that our funding goes as far as possible, it's in those conversations about like where we're establishing our payment standard, who we're assisting, when we're coming up with a plan on the emergency housing voucher, I think it's absolutely correct that we really want to make sure that we understand that people are waiting. And it's trying to strike that perfect balance that we're constantly focused on.
Okay, Commissioner Bobbitt.
If I could add just one more thing. The fact that we are losing the EHV vouchers, we knew that they were going to expire at one point, but they're expiring sooner. And the trickle effect of that means that those 489 and those vouchers that we're moving over, that means that on the back end of it, we're also seeing that loss. So it's we're doing a great job right now, but it really has collateral damage. And so I just wanted to point that out.
Okay. If there's no other comments, I have a couple questions. The $1,000 offer, how long does that last?
The technical advisor told us that there is no indication that it would go into 2026. And so that's why we want to move.
It's a one-time happy payment.
Yeah, one-time payment. That's what I mean. So you don't want to, had been asked, why don't you move all 489 and get 489,000? 489,000,
yeah.
Not a small number.
Yeah.
But it's not enough.
Understood. And then can you just repeat again what our 2023 waitlist number is?
Sure. The 2023 waitlist number is 11,993.
So 2,000 on the 2012.
Correct.
And 11,993 on the 2023. And that's families, not individuals, right?
They're mixed. We did.
No, my question is the number 11,993 does
correct.
Not represent
those
people.
Those represent applications.
Thank you. So there are more, it's higher numbers than that of people. I think you've done a great job. It was just very well thought out, and we're truly preventing homelessness. And unfortunately, we didn't bring this on, but we're handling it in a really great way, and hopefully we can lead the way with some of these other folks in the county. So appreciate your work. Okay, with that, are there any public comments on this?
Chair, we do have one request to speak, Alejandro Santiago with United to End Homelessness.
Great.
We'll start your timer when you're ready.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, and good morning. I'm here to speak on support of this agenda item. We know that this is a troubling time and hard, but I really want to commend the county staff for thinking of this very innovative idea and bringing this just kind of like idea to make sure that people don't fall into homelessness. We're really proud. We also feel really proud that we have county staff that thinks in such an innovative way when we have really big issues. I also want to take some time to invite you all to the Person in Front of You campaign that we're having for Hunger Homelessness Summer this week. We're going to have a really amazing event on November 15th, and I have some flyers here for you to learn more and hopefully join us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You can give them to the clerk. I'm sure she'd be happy to pass those out. Thank you for your comments. Any other comments, Madam Clerk?
No, Chair. No additional request to speak on discussion item number 8.
Okay, great. I'll entertain a motion to receive and file discussion item number 1.
I'll make the motion.
Commissioner Huff makes a motion and a second from
Carrie Buck.
Second.
Commissioner Buck beat you to it, I think.
Sorry.
Commissioner Gray. She had her coffee this morning. Okay, so all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries unanimously. There are no public hearing items, so we will move on to item 10, reports of staff and or commission members, and we're skipping A. It's my understanding, or?
Yes, I'm for the Orange County Housing Authority update. You have been fully updated by January.
Fully updated, we are.
So, yes, Chair.
Okay.
On community development, I'm gonna give the update. Craig had been out of the office, so we have the fiscal year 24-25 consolidated annual performance and evaluation report. That was submitted to HUD in September. That takes all of our annual action plan goals and gives an update on how we performed, what money we spent in the CDBG home and ESG program, and what we spent it on. In addition, we're starting the 26-27 funding year. That kicks off with the funding allocation policy and process We call it the FAP. It's out for public review through October 27th, and we go to the Board of Supervisors with that on November 4th. That outlines the policies that we will use for distributing community development block grant funds. So those are the two updates from community development this morning.
Great. And then I think we're having Michelle Zadiba come up, Housing Development, Housing Development Manager.
Good morning, Michelle Zadiba, Housing Development Manager. For this meeting, I wanted to share a couple of updates for the Project Review Advisory Panel. Since our last commission meeting, we have had three meetings. Our meeting in August, we went over Aspen Court. That's a project in Lake Forest, which we passed on threshold review, which moved on to underwriting. In September, we met and we reviewed Tustin Heritage, which is a small project in Tustin brought forward by Families Forward. It's 8 units. And so that one is also moving into the underwriting phase. As well as Lamson Workforce Housing, which PRAB did concur with staff's recommendation to move it forward in the underwriting phase. And we're hoping to be able to bring Lamson Workforce Housing in the city of Los Alamitos to the Board of Supervisors for approval in the next coming months, we hope. In our October meeting, we went over our mortgage assistance program guidelines with PRAB. We were hoping to be able to update it. It's been a couple of years since our last update, and our program has been underutilized. And so historically, we've been using Cal Home Funds prior to that home funds to be able to do this first-time home buyer mortgage assistance program loans for individuals who are 80% AMI. Under the permanent local housing allocation program under the state, we receive funding and a portion of it should be allocated towards home ownership programs as well. And so we're utilizing those funds to try and kickstart this program a little bit more. PLHA does allow the AMI to go up to 150% AMI. And so what staff has been noodling on is increasing the AMI limits to try to get more utilization. We haven't closed on a loan in 2 years. Right now we're doing $80,000 per loan for 80% AMI, but because the home prices are so high, interest rates are so high, we're not getting any utilization at all. And so our thought was, well, we can, CalHome restricts it at 80% AMI. We'll keep those funds there, but we'll bump up the per unit loan amount. So instead of $80,000 per loan, we'll bump it up to $120,000 per loan. And then also do maybe like a tiered system where we're going up to 120. Obviously the cap is 150% AMI. I think we're receiving feedback from PRAB about the concern of going up to the maximum for this program. And so right now we're trying to survey what, and we did this prior to bringing some recommendations forward, but we're also now surveying their utilization rates. And so we're talking to County of LA, City of Santa Ana, some of our other partners to see what their utilization has been. So far, I think County LA had a program where they did go up to 150% AMI. The funds went really quick, and so they then bumped that down to 120% AMI. So I think, Wayne, that kind of goes to your question about if we did 150% AMI, would that money go fast? It seems like if we're kind of following what County of LA did, it might go faster. And so we're taking a look at where we think a middle ground is, and then we'll bring that back to PRAB for consideration after we're done kind of surveying and then re-looking at our recommendations. Right now we're kind of heavy in the planning process. We're planning the mortgage assistance program. We're also planning for our 2026 notice of funding availability, where we would put additional vouchers if we, assuming, you know, we're planning for it and we have vouchers, making that available for new development, as well as funding sources that we may have to carry over. Right now, we're also really deep into the planning process for the Behavioral Health Services Act, which is a transition from the Mental Health Services Act. And so the population essentially is similar. You have also the substance use disorder component on top of the mental health condition. And so We're going through that planning process. I think if all goes well, there is a portion that's eligible for capital funding. We're able to utilize that for our NOFA. That'll be great, and we can continue the good work that we've been doing. But right now, a lot of things are in the air and moving, so we're still planning for it. The amount of funding, the amount of resources we have, you may see maybe less than previous years, but that's just the nature of where we're at right now. And then in terms of anything notable, we don't have any upcoming events right now, but we do anticipate that we'll probably have some in the next 4 or 5 months or so with all of the closings that we've been having. And this month, we're hoping to complete construction on HB Oasis, which is a 63-unit project. It's actually a HomeKey project in the city of Huntington Beach. And so that was interim housing. We're converted to permanent housing. And we're very excited about that project coming to fruition. Do we have any questions? Yes.
Carrie Buck, could you tell me again the Tustin Heritage and the Land Force Workforce Housing, which are, who is the project for? You said Families Forward for one, what was the?
Oh yes, Families Forward for Tustin Heritage. It's an 8-unit small project in the city of Tustin. And then Lamson Workforce Housing is a CNC project, and that project is part of a larger master plan community.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
A couple questions on mortgage assistance.
Commissioner Frost?
Oh, yeah, Commissioner Frost. If we're underutilizing, we are getting funds every year, has that basically built up, or have we been losing that?
So for the Cal Home program, you have to apply for it, but because our utilization hasn't met the minimum threshold to score, we haven't been able to apply for Cal Home. And so our Cal Home has been what they call reuse funds. And so it's funds that we've had, we get payoffs, we put it back in to the pot, and then we continue to do it that way. So just re-administering funds that we have existing, but through Cal Home, we don't get new funds unless we apply for it, which we haven't met the threshold for.
Okay, we have to have enough applications to apply.
Yeah. Okay. There's a minimum number of loans that you must process on a consistent basis, and we haven't met that. So we're hoping with the PLHA funds and being able to put that in and kickstart the utilization, then we're able to meet the minimum threshold, because CalHome doesn't require you to only use CalHome to run your program. You can use any type of funding. You just have to show that it's being utilized, because why would they give you funding if you're not using it? And so we're hoping that with the PLHA, we get the program going, and then we'll be eligible to apply for CalHome in the future, which would then open up more funding for the program.
How do we market that?
We've done home ownership workshops with Affordable Housing Clearinghouse, which is really big in Orange. They do a lot of home ownership advocacy, information. They do a lot of workshops, and they're really engaged in the community. It's not that we don't have applicants. We have plenty of applicants. We actually have, I want to say, is 20 plus folks that have approvals that are looking for homes. And then they come up for, re-review and reapproval. They're not competitive in the market. We had someone who was close to being able to get a home, I want to say about 6 months ago, but then their bank couldn't qualify them.
Oh, so they actually apply before they have a property. Applying as a person.
They can apply either or, but they'll go through like the first time home buyer workshop, get their, you get a certificate for doing all the first time home buyer stuff, and then Affordable Housing Clearinghouse will help them get qualified through us, so then they can kind of show like a first lender, hey, I'm qualified, and this is how much I'll get in, down payment assistance. They'll match them with other programs too. They have like a WISH program, they'll help them with closing costs, and so they're trying to braid all these funding sources to help make a very competitive application. It's just because of the high interest rates, and you have to have a certain down payment to really bring down that, to have an affordable monthly mortgage. It's just our folks with the 80% AMI, that just hasn't been realistic for them.
And Michelle, this program is only in the unincorporated and participating cities.
Yes.
In the urban county program. It originally was approved, instead of the county only applying for its unincorporated areas for Cal Home, we approved in, we received letters from all the small cities participating in the Urban County Program. And then the PLHA funding is actually on the CDBG model, and services, or the funds are eligible for small participating cities. So it's a little bit smaller than the entirety of the county. We have 12, 13 participating cities in our Urban County Program. So it's a large portion of the county, but it is restricted to those jurisdictions.
Interesting.
Okay. And I'm Julia Bidwell, the Director of OC Housing and Community Development.
Okay, great.
Any other questions?
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Michelle.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Okay, now our Executive Director, Julia Bidwell.
Hi, Julia Bidwell. Executive Director, OCHA Director, OC Housing Community Development. Just first update on government shutdown, just so you have an awareness. The Housing Authority received confirmation that funding for November to cover our costs and December have been obligated. So we have our obligated funds for both those months, so we will be okay. They don't actually give it to us until right to the prior of the first of the month, and then we make all of our payments. NARO, National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, received confirmation from HUD that November-December funding should be released to PHAs without interruption. HUD has a contingency plan that indicates they will make staff available to ensure obligated funds are released on a timely, consistent manner. Additionally, we have a contingency plan in place. OCHA, and this is the county, OCHA can borrow enough funds to cover up to 2 months of housing payment funding beyond, in case. We've always had that because there have been times where the federal government has just been delayed in making payments, and we can't delay payments to landlords. So we do a temporary borrowing, and then when we get the money, we just give it right back. So we've had that in place for some time. And then we have enough reserves to cover administrative costs without the need to borrow. So this is mainly for the housing assistance payments that we make. And all of that is covered. So a good contingency plan. It lasts through the end of the year. So we will see what goes on. For the other side of the house, HUD has two houses, Public Housing Authority side, or PHA. The other is Community Planning and Development, your CDBG, your home, your ESG funds. On that side, the Urban County had 25, 26 funds were obligated to us as well in those programs. We are seeing the HUD staff making payments and reimbursements on invoices. So. That's positive news there. So I'm going to switch over into continuum of care grants. So an emerging potential impact to OCHA's continuum of care grants. OCHA has, I'm going to say this, maybe 5-6 grants where they pay rental assistance on behalf of 509 clients. These are not vouchers. This is a separate grant-funded program that pays rental assistance. So rental assistance acts much the same way, 30%, or if you have zero, then you pay zero. So we're tracking a potential impact through the, along with a continuum of care, because these funds come through them, which is administered by the Office of Care Coordination. There's information that the administration may require continuums of care who apply for this renewal funding on an annual basis to shift 80% of their permanent supportive housing funding, such as OCHA's rental assistance, to transitional shelter activities. So this is a potential reduction in any PSH-funded activities through the continuum of care. Until the administration releases their notice of funding opportunity, which was paused because of the government shutdown, we will not know for sure. The COC is starting to work on what options there may be, considering a large portion of the COC grant funding is PSH activity. So OCHA is not alone in this. There are other nonprofits that receive continuum of care grant funds for permanent supportive housing activities within the continuum of care. So we're working closely with them. I had the opportunity to speak at the Continuum of Care Board meeting yesterday. A lot of people are looking to housing authorities, and we just do not have that kind of funding to absorb all of the Continuum of Care grant individuals into our program. We'll have to assess, and the administrative plan language today that you concurred with includes the word grant funding. I don't know whether the HUD technical assistance guide knew this was coming, but it gives us that opportunity that if we do have any room, and again, you look at things such as, is anybody eligible for a VASH voucher, right, that they could be absorbed there. So we kind of start over again. Many analogies have been used. I used EHV as the first ant to the picnic, and here comes the second. Right, and so we need to work with all the partners that are available, because obviously we're going about absorbing EHV into our housing choice voucher waiting list, and we don't, you know, the funding is not unlimited. So we'll work with other housing authorities, we'll work with the continuum of care, hopefully. Again, it was just a leaked set of information that came out in Politico, so nothing's been confirmed by the administration, and until we know when that notice of funding of opportunity comes out, that's when we'll know. So I'll keep you updated as we get more information. So that is my report for this morning, unless there are any questions.
Oh, Carla.
Oh, sorry.
Carla Wilkerson. I saw that under the definition for the plan revisions, so through special purpose voucher and grant funded programs such as EHV. So under EHV is continuum of care?
It's actually under grant funded programs.
Okay.
So I know the parens such as EHV follows all that. January, I don't know whether you want to put the paren somewhere else, but continuum of care follows under grant-funded programs.
Okay. Are there any other specific programs that, under the special purpose vouchers or the grant-funded programs, that are going to be a part of this revision?
Not at this time. So mainstream vouchers had specific, we applied for specific allocations of them. They weren't like the EHV where they were, it was always going to be time limited. So we have those, we have no availability mm-hmm. in our mainstream program. We have the Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing vouchers. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to be limited, and they're a separate pot of funding. Hopefully January is saying yes. Then the Housing Choice Voucher Program. So we have received no indication for that. And then we have non-elderly disabled, or also another special purpose voucher that we received. So we haven't received any indication that these other programs are, you know, jeopardy of losing funding. Most of them just go into the pot of the Housing Choice Voucher Program. Mm-hmm. Mainstream, NED, all of that winds up there. Mm-hmm. VASH has a separate funding source, but I don't want to go into it, but it ends up in HCV, I think. And so right now we're just tracking on Emergency Housing Voucher, which is a special purpose voucher, and continuum of care grants, which is a grant funded program.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Commissioner Buck. Carrie Buck, this is, as you mentioned, another ant to the picnic. This is a whole nother ball of housing that we're looking at losing. I just want to point out that there was a meeting between the Commission to Address Homelessness and the COC board meeting a few weeks ago, and it's on YouTube so that you can go back and watch it if you'd like. There's a lot of different report outs on what's happening. But it's just not good news. Thank you for the update.
Yeah.
Real quick questions. Frost, this sounds like it's a bit different than the emergency vouchers in that you said it's the funding just has to be directed to what, transitional? Did I misunderstand that?
So the continuum of care is funded $20+ million of activities, and every year they come for renewal funding.
Yep.
I think 80% of them are permanent supportive housing, but or up to 90% of them are permanent supportive housing activities. The shift would be that you'd have to take all that money away from those permanent supportive housing activities and offer it up to transitional housing activities. So you defund your permanent supportive housing programs to fund other transitional housing programs.
Okay. Okay. Whereas the emergency, the EHV, they just cut it.
Yeah, they ran out of money sooner than they had told us they had. In EHV, they thought they had to, through 2035, we would be funded. And it was a shock in March of this year when they said, this is your last allocation. Make it last as long as you can.
And so, for the grant, somebody, or whoever's making these decisions believes that it's more important to invest in transitional housing then, I guess?
The federal administration.
Okay. I guess, would that help us at all here? Granted, it's not good for the permanent supportive housing, but
Yeah, I'm gonna defer the conversation to the continuum of care because it's much larger than our permanent housing piece that we cover. I don't think I'm wrong in saying I don't think it's great for permanent housing to lose funding for 509 potentially individuals that have rental assistance. But how they could use the transitional funding, I'll defer to the care coordination on that.
Commissioner Buck, if I could add to it, and Dr. Mitchell's on the COC board as well, so feel free to jump in. The NOFO was given out as a two-year last year, and it was pulled back and said, we're not going to issue the NOFO that was approved already. They reissued it, then they stopped, so we're on the third iteration of it. They have added the expectation is that they're going to be adding a lot of additional requirements. One of those would be data exchange with the federal government, requirement of people to have treatment as part of that. We have kind of shifted away from transitional housing in Orange County because with the Housing First model and wrapping services around that instead of having transitional shelters. So we don't have a lot of them available, and so that would remove everybody out of that. Then we would have to put money toward if we can apply and if we meet all those requirements. It's not an automatic we get that. This is it's gonna go out for release again. And the last time they did it, it was like a week long application process. And it's usually about 6 weeks. So there's all kinds of hoops to even jump through when and if it's released, and we don't even know what that's gonna look like. So this is also a whole nother scary thing. And we have four projects here as OCHA, but there are, I think, 13 different projects with all the different shelters and programs and housing, like Families Forward, and that was mentioned before. So it's a whole different set, and we don't even know if that's gonna happen. Like, if we'll get any funding.
Commissioner Mitchell. So Carrie's right, and I will just add, it's really complex, and I'm still wrapping my brain around it, and I'm on the board. But yeah, it's a complete shift to how we have set up our continuum of care to support people, moving them through, you know, out of homelessness, to now go back to relooking at the Housing First model and going back into transitional housing and things like that. So it's a lot of things that we don't have answers for that we're still working through. I also sit on the Policy and Procedure Committee for the CLC Board. And part of just going back and looking at making sure we're eligible for any release, you know, funding opportunities is looking at the language we have in our charter and things like that. Because of, you know, administrative mandates and things like that. So there are a lot of pieces that we have to look at to make sure that we're positioned to even go after funding opportunities when they open up again, you know, in addition to addressing the current issue, which is potentially some of our folks having to move back into homelessness if we don't have a good strategy in place.
Great. Well, this now we move on to, thank you for your comments, Executive Director Bidwell. We're moving on to member comments. At this time, members of the agency commission may comment on agenda or non-agenda matters and ask questions or give direction of staff, provided that no action shall be taken on non-agenda items unless authorized by law. Are there any comments by the commissioners?
I have.
Yes, Commissioner Wilkerson.
Thank you. Yeah, you guys have done a tremendous job in trying to have a plan to be prepared for what's ahead, the known and unknown. And I just want to thank you personally. And because, again, like the news is so vague and it's eye-opening and it's eye-opening, not necessarily in a good way, but thank you for, this was good news to me. I don't know about the rest of the commission, but it was good news that that this housing authority has a plan, some sort of plan going forward, so thank you.
Absolutely. Well, I'll make some comments. I attended the Commission to End Homelessness meeting with the Continuum of Care with Executive Director Julia Bidwell, and they were really glad that someone from this board was there representing. They were very happy that we were there listening and taking it all in and representing, so I was glad to be there. And then I also attended the Jamboree project with the San Juan City Hall. I was kind of at the tail end of that. Where they took their city hall, it's the coolest project, and then they've got Jamboree did affordable housing, and I guess it's their permanent supportive housing in there as well. And then they got their city hall renovated.
That's
and
great.
So that was an amazing, unique project that probably should win some awards at some point because it was very interesting reuse, and it was just a great benefit to the whole San Juan community. So. With that, I will adjourn. I will remind you that our next scheduled meeting will be held.
Can I ask for one thing?
Sure.
Commissioner Buck, just as was mentioned before, the event on November 15th that we're doing, it's to bring 500 people together all over the county. You can register on Eventbrite through United to End Homelessness, but it's 500 people, and we're going to take a drone photo of everybody in the shape of a house. So we're going to look at that image. It's for Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week, so we would love to have you all there. I have some extra shirts in the car if you would like to have one and be an advocate to take pictures and share that. But we're doing this so that you have more people as representatives out in the community that support affordable housing, because we know it's going to take all of us. Thank you.
Let's see what's on the back of your
shirt. It says the person in front of you wants you to have a safe and affordable place to call home.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's awesome. Oh.
And then on the front is a little guy, the designer from Stranger Things, he does all the t-shirts for all the stuff. He actually is a friend of one of our staff members and made this. His name is Homie. And he's got this cute little childlike image, and he's sitting on a little hill because he found his place. And it's that image of all kids deserve a place to have a home. So we would love to see you all there. Registration is listed as well. So thank you.
Awesome. No worries. Appreciate your work on this. This looks like a great event.
I have one in the car.
So I'll just remind everybody, our next meeting will be December 4th, 2025. So there's no meeting in November, and this is our combined November-December meeting. So it'll be the last meeting of the year. Okay, we're adjourned. Great meeting, guys. Thank you. Oops.